The Stacey Ennis Show, a podcast about writing, solopreneurship, travel, and really about living the life you want. I'm your host, Stacey Ennis, coming to you from the incredible country of Portugal. This week, I am sharing an Ask Stacey I did live. The questions I received were so wonderful. I had such a great time answering them. And I received a whole bunch of different topics, from book writing to business building to lifestyle design to childhood memories. I really hope you find this episode helpful and enjoyable. And if you want to submit a question for a future episode, just go to stacyennis.com/contact and submit your question. All right, here is this week's episode. I sent out an email and I also sent out a Facebook and Instagram story asking you to ask me your questions. And I've been gathering them for a couple of weeks, and actually I've been saving some other ones for a little bit longer. And so today I am going to answer those questions for you. And they are really good questions, so I'm very excited to answer them. So I have a pretty wide range. If you're not sure if these apply to you, let me give you a little taste of kind of what I'm covering. So I have a question about book writing. I have a question about business and finances. I have a question about my childhood. I got a good amount of marketing and business questions, which are great because I love talking about those things. So let's dive right in. The first question is from Timothy. And Timothy asks, I am entering a stage in my project that could be considered an epilogue. A lot of things happened in the 12 months after I was discharged and was wondering, should I continue to make it part of my story or should I end it as I returned home a civilian? There were things that happened during my story that are directly connected to things that happened during that 12-month period, and I'm just wondering. So I'm going to make an assumption that this is about a book project. That's my general assumption on this question. And it's a really good question because I have worked on a number of books where you're focusing on a particular part of your life story, and then you have to make a decision, do I then kind of fill in the rest of the gaps, or do I leave readers kind of on a cliffhanger, wondering if there's like what else happened after that? So clearly this person had a lot of things that happened in that period after being discharged. And here's what I would say to him. So Timothy, if you're listening to this or watching, my main question to you would be, what is your goal in the book? So are you purely storytelling, or are you trying to communicate some kind of message to the reader? So if you're trying to communicate a message and you've decided that this period of your life that the book focuses on is the best way to communicate that message, then I would only include an epilogue if it builds on that message, so it reinforces what you are teaching through your story. The other thing that I would say is, or the other question I would ask you is there another book inside of you? Because if there is another book inside of you, then maybe you don't want to include an epilogue because maybe you want people to be curious and to want to read your next book. So if you think that maybe there are more books to come, then maybe don't include an epilogue. And in that case, then you can write your next book and bring people into your next book in that way. I actually have a project like this that I'm working on right now. And I've had lots along the way that I've had to make this decision on. Now, this current project, we decided to include one because it further drove home the core message of the book. And so in that case, it made a lot of sense to include an epilogue. There was a big time gap, and it made sense to include an epilogue of sorts to help further kind of drive home that message for the reader. And then sometimes I do think that people throw epilogues or prologues or all kinds of other logs in that are actually not that helpful. So the other thing I would say for you is to just write it and then get some professional advice on that. So write the epilogue and then get an editor or some kind of writing professional to review it for you and help you decide if you keep it, because you can always kill it, but it's hard to make that decision if it's not there to decide about. Okay, thanks for that question, Timothy. That was great. All right, next question is a good one, so it's about business. Laura asks, can you discuss your progression from copy editing to ghostwriting and more, and tell us which work you enjoy the most and which is the most lucrative? Is it best to narrow your focus to one service or to diversify? And what methods have served you well for finding clients? Thanks. Having a career that allows you to work and live wherever you want to is awesome. Yes, it is awesome. You know, this lifestyle that we live today is something that more than 10 years ago, my husband and I said, if we could do anything we wanted, what would we do? Well, if we have kids, because we didn't know at the time, if we have kids, we want to be able to live wherever we want. We want to be able to travel the world. We want to be able to explore. And so what we did is we started with, what is our vision for our life? And how? And then I asked the question, how can I build my business around that vision? When I started my business back in 2009, I was doing travel writing, which is not a very lucrative profession, just so you know. I learned that lesson a little bit the hard way. So I, as Laura mentioned, I did progress from editing, really. So I started out trying to be a travel writer. Then I realized that if I wanted to make money, editing was a better path. So I started doing editing. I worked in magazines and I started editing books. And to give a really quick and dirty story of my progression, I started editing books. I started writing magazine articles. I eventually worked at a national publication for Sam's Club. It's called Healthy Living Made Simple. And then eventually became executive editor of that publication. Now there's a long story in the in-between, but that's kind of the gist. And along the way, I was ghostwriting for a Nobel Prize winner in medicine for about 4 years and his business partner, and wrote many hundreds, if not thousands, of pieces of content for them. And along the way, I was paying attention to the work that I enjoyed and the work that I didn't enjoy so much. And the work that I enjoyed was the work that let me stretch my creativity. It let me be engaged, and also it was the work that paid more, because that was more fulfilling for me most of the time. It doesn't feel very good to use your talents and to not get paid well for them. And so I eventually noticed that ghostwriting and writing in general was a more lucrative path for me, and I started working in that direction. And so this is like a 10 or 11 year process condensed into a very short answer to this question. But the thing that I would say to you, Laura, is when you are trying to build your business and really attract clients and to build a more lucrative business rather than just like freelancing to the point that it's not even fun because you're always stressing about the next job, which is more often than not the freelancer way, just understand what you're really great at and the kind of people that you can serve best. So for me, eventually, I realized that my niche was really in business and leadership and helping people transition from success to influence and help people share their stories and write their books and all the things that come with that, who are making an impact on the world, that they're doing something good. They're putting something good out into the world. And because I eventually, over many years, developed that clarity, it was much easier for me to attract the kind of clients that really fit with the kind of work that I wanted to do. And that kind of naturally snowballed into the business that I have today. The other thing that I would say in response to your question is that along the way, I wrote a couple of books. So I wrote my first book, which was on book editing, and then I co-authored my second book with Ron Price, which came out in 2018. And then I had a bunch of books that I ghostwrote along the way, which I won't share the names of with you. But I think at this point, it's been a number of books and hundreds, thousands of pieces of content. I would say that to respond to your second part of your question, is it best to narrow your focus to one service or to diversify? For me, having lots of income streams has been super important, especially, I mean, just look at right now. Okay, so if I only had one income stream, when all of this stuff hit, very likely I would have panicked. So instead, because I have speaking as a revenue stream, I have ghostwriting as a revenue stream, I have book coaching as a revenue stream, I have training, live trainings as a revenue stream, and then I have online, I have a course and some other online offerings as a revenue stream. And so what I've done is I've gotten really specific in understanding who I serve, and then I've built products and services around those people that have allowed me to be really nimble. So when all this stuff hit, the COVID-19 stuff, I could just pivot and focus more attention in one place. The other question that that you asked, Laura, about what methods have served you well for finding clients. Oh, wow. I could talk about this for an hour. But I would say the best piece of advice I could give you here is content. Show up consistently. Serve people well. And do it regularly. Consistency is the name of the game. So I have been showing up in some capacity. If you go to my blog, you will see that my very first blog post was in 2008. Now, I've had different iterations of my website along the way, but I've been showing up for a long time and very consistently in, I would say, maybe the last 6 to 8 years. And there have been blips here and there, but in general, I have really showed up consistently, and that makes a difference. And not just on your own platform, but contributing to other platforms as well. That can be really powerful. Thank you for that question, Laura. Okay, now to Roberta's question, which this is a more specific one, which is kind of fun. What is your opinion of WordPress versus Wix? I am using Wix for my blog right now and enjoy its simplicity, but, and this is another question, I'm not getting many comments from readers. How does a non-tech-savvy person drive more people to her blog posts and websites? Okay, so to answer your first question, I favor WordPress just in general because you can customize it. It's also much more friendly for search engines like Google, so you're more likely to rank up higher in the search results if you're using WordPress versus if you're using Wix or Squarespace. That's just kind of a generally accepted rule. But for our, so I have my main business, which I house everything at stacyennis.com. And then I have another company that I co-founded with three other amazing women, nextlevelwomenleaders.com. That's where you can look at that site. Now that one is on Squarespace. The reason we went with Squarespace for that one is because we actually don't have a blog on that site. And we don't really need to go in and customize a bunch of stuff because it wasn't necessary for our business. Now, on my site, I have a lot of different things happening. I have my podcast on there. I have a custom template. I have my blog. And so there's a lot of things that I really wanted to have more control over. And that's why I went with WordPress. The other thing I'd like to note on that is that I actually hire people to help me with my WordPress site because it can get really complicated. I can do the basic stuff, I can figure out most stuff, but most of the time I just don't really want to. It could take me 10 hours, whereas I could hire somebody and pay them for half an hour because they know what they're doing. So I usually hire help. And then regarding comments, so the question there was, how does a non-tech savvy person drive more people to her blog posts and websites? Now, I actually don't really do ads or any fancy SEO other than I use WordPress, which naturally has better SEO. But again, this goes back to the comment that I had for Laura. So Roberta, I would say show up regularly. So if you want more readers, you need to create more content to attract people to your site. And you need to be contributing to other platforms. So if you want to be seen as a person who's an expert in something or is somebody maybe a lifestyle influencer? I don't know exactly what your site is about, but maybe you're in the leadership realm, or maybe you have a baking blog, whatever it is. You need to be showing up regularly for your audience, and you also need to be showing up on other platforms to be teaching people, or I guess contributing, sorry, to those platforms in some way, and that can be through teaching. So as an example, when my book came out, my very first book in 2013, I contributed a blog post to janefriedman.com. And that post, which I spent a lot of energy and time on, really paid off and has driven a ton of people my direction. Then when I made a business pivot, I contributed another post. I think that one was in 2016. And that's continued to drive people my direction. So can you identify top websites in your industry or in your specific niche and go to the person that runs the blog or the person who owns the site and offer an article? A lot of times people will be willing to take your content because they need content. But the thing I would say is be very targeted. I get a lot of pitches for my blog and I don't take very many, actually almost none. Part of that's because I can tell that they've just kind of haphazardly sent the same thing out to a bunch of people. So just be really specific and thoughtful in your pitch. And the other thing I would say when you are creating your content is just get really clear on who you are writing to. So you're not writing to everyone. If you write to everyone, you write to nobody. Nobody is going to read your stuff because they're not going to know if it's for them or not. So for you to be able to write to a very specific audience, you need to understand who that audience is. And it might be useful for you to just sit down and create a persona, much like in the marketing world, where you're actually digging in and asking questions like, okay, is there a predominant gender of my audience? About what age is my audience? What is their education level? What are their problems? What are the things that they need support on? How can I serve these people? And if it's serving through teaching maybe, or it's serving through entertainment, it's serving through storytelling, whatever that is, but just get really, really clear on your audience. And let's see, the last thing I would just reiterate is just getting some publications out there. So whether it's a book, maybe it's time for you to write your book, or it's getting articles on different platforms, major sites. That will drive a lot of people to your website as well. You can also think about creating a lead magnet. So that's something where people give you their email address in exchange for something valuable that you give to them. Lots of great strategies out there for driving more people. But I would say, again, going way back to the first thing I said, consistency. That is the number one absolute most important thing. Okay, great question, Roberta. Thanks for sending that in. Okay, I think I have three more questions. So Angie asks, self-time management. Very interested in how to schedule and block time effectively. I love time blocking. Time blocking is probably one of my very, very favorite things ever. I have been a huge productivity nerd since I was pretty much in high school. Now, let me just say, there was a period of my life where I was not productive at all. I was failing some classes that one should never fail, like home ec, when I was in high school. I was not turning in my homework on time. I would do it, but then I would leave it in my notebook or on my desk at home or somewhere, and it wouldn't get turned in. And I would lay awake at night, and I would just think about all the things that I was probably going to forget or screw up on or whatever it was. I just had all these anxieties about getting things done. And so I started my journey to productivity with a paper planner. And since high school, I really have studied productivity. I have much of my life revolves around understanding how to be more productive, how to access my creativity, how to get into the flow more efficiently and really get into the flow, not force it, but like train my mind and my body to get into the flow more efficiently. And so one of my favorite strategies for that is time blocking. And I use this as a guide. It's not the law, but the way that I do this is essentially I break out my time in blocks during the week. So pretty straightforward time blocking, you block your time and I block out everything. So most of my day looks something like this. I have a half an hour in the morning where I am reading, journaling, meditating, or praying, or I'm doing all of them. So I find sometimes in the morning, I don't feel like I necessarily need to do all three, but I do feel like I want to read that morning or I want to meditate that morning. And so I kind of go with the flow, but I always make time in the morning, 15 to 30 minutes, I block out 30 to really have a focused, thoughtful morning routine. And then from there, I have my creative focus time. So that is about 2 to 3 hours, I block out three on my calendar where I am 100% focused on the task at hand. So whether I am writing a book or I'm writing an article or I am writing an email to my list, whatever it is that I'm working on, I'm extraordinarily focused. And I don't check my email until about 11 a.m. Most days, I'm not perfect, but most days I don't check my email until about 11 a.m. And this makes a huge difference for me in just my kind of focus and ability to get my work done. I believe, and I feel that I have proven this out, but I don't really have any data to point to, that I have about 4x productivity during that focus time compared with once I open that trap door to my brain, which is email, social media, whatever it is I need to do that day. I am so much more focused during that period of time, and it makes a huge, huge, huge difference in my day. Now, the rest of my week is blocked similarly. I take a 2-hour lunch almost every day. I exercise, I eat good food, I reset my body, I refresh, I get back to my desk, and it's like working 2 solid work days. And I don't have that usually, that end of the day fatigue that a lot of us experience in our daily work lives. The other thing that I would say is to make sure that if you are time blocking, that you get everything you need to do on there. So what we tend to do is we have this big long to-do list and we kind of just like check off all the items as we go. But for me as a business owner, and this will look a little different if you're employed, I have a marketing focused day, I have a finance focused day, and I have all of these different kind of blocks. Since I'm a co-founder of Next Level Women Leaders, I have a big period of focus on Mondays. I do other things for it throughout the week, but Mondays is when I really focus in and do a lot of work on it. And that blocking for me makes a huge difference, and I really get so much more done, and I enjoy it more. So I'm not like dragging through my day. I'm actually very engaged and very excited about my work. I get to be engaged and fresh and focused, which makes a big difference. Great question. I actually want to do a podcast episode all about this time blocking, productivity, time management, because it is a real struggle for a lot of us. And I know from experience that if you are not a naturally organized person, I am not naturally organized. It is not natural. And it's funny because a lot of my clients over the years have said, "Oh, Stacey, you're so organized." And I have to like resist being like, "No, I'm not," because I'm just not a naturally organized person. It is by force of discipline and really working on it that I have gotten to be better at it, but it's not an area that I excel in naturally. So if you're the same as me and you don't naturally excel at organization or time management, that's okay. You actually can get better at it just like me. Okay, 2 more questions. So Anonymous asks, "Mine is one of how to build a good client base and how to best present oneself. Also, what's a decent method for methodically contacting potential clients? Is it worth it to offer free sample edits? How to set a budget as a freelancer, especially when you're single and don't have the luxury of a spouse's income to fall back on in lean times? If only freelancing part-time, how can an editor go about being selective and taking on projects that fit them best?" Okay, so there are a lot of questions layered into this one question. So I'm gonna do my best. I have lots of bullet points here to make sure I hit everything. But let me just start by saying, I know this person is an editor, and so that will frame the way that I respond to a lot of this layered question. I started my business in my bedroom in the Dominican Republic because that was the only room that had air conditioning in it. And over the years, it has been a lot of trial and error. And it's interesting reading this question because I feel all of those questions. I've been through all of these kind of growth phases of my business. And so the first thing I would say on the question of how to present yourself is that a great website is absolutely critical. If you're trying to decide where to invest your money or how to spend your money to invest in your business, a website. I can't emphasize this enough because you have to think about your website as essentially a handshake with your client. You're your website is where people first meet you. I mean, it's not necessarily going to be on a video like this where they actually get to see your face, and it's not maybe even going to be in an email if they join your list. They'll meet you on your website, and so that website needs to show up in your place. It's like taking the place of you. The other layer of this was about contacting potential clients. I get this question a lot, especially from editors and writers who are trying to build their business. It's hard at first to find potential clients. And I'll share a major fail that I went through. So when I first started my business, I was trying to, as I mentioned earlier, be a travel writer. And also then I decided to start taking on editing. And my business was called Freelance Expat. I think it was freelanceexpat.com. I think if you go to the Google Time Machine, you can even see it. But I had a typo on my first page of my website. Yes, I did. On the very first page of my website, I had a typo. And I was sending out to prospective clients trying to win business. So let's also say we all go through this. We all make kind of funny errors along the way. Once I realized how important that website was, I fixed that and I redid it and I relaunched it. And then the other thing that I did is I reached out to anybody and everybody I possibly could. Now, I think that, and I've gotten this a lot in my conversations with people looking to build their businesses as a freelancer or even to build a small team. And it's easy to look at somebody who's been in business for, in my case, almost 11 years, and to think that they naturally were able to get clients and it all worked out for them. But it's actually not true. It's most everybody I've ever met has had a real struggle phase where they had to go out there, they had to go after clients, they had to aggressively look for work. So I'm gonna date myself, but I was looking for work on Craigslist. That was the main form of finding writing work. I don't even think, let's see, I think Fiverr was just coming into being about then. We didn't have platforms like Readsy, which I have a course on their website. It's a platform for connecting people who are looking to hire writers and editors, nothing like that. So I was just online writing jobs, Googling it. I was looking for every possible avenue to find clients. That was just what I did. And I sent, I don't even know how many emails. And pretty much all of them landed on deaf ears. Nobody responded to me. Nobody got back to me and nobody hired me, but a few did. So what I focused on is when I did get work, when I did land clients, regardless of what I was getting paid, I super served that client. I delivered excellent work. And eventually, over time, not over months, over years, I was able to build up a reputation through my work. What I see happen too often when people are new is they expect instant success. They expect to get in and they expect to see clients come in right away and have instant credibility and instant client flow. That actually happens sometimes when you're more established in your career. I was 25, I think, 25 when I started my business. And so, no, I was younger than that. I think I was 23. So you have to think about, for me back then, I didn't have the career credibility that maybe some of you have that are watching this. But regardless, even if you do have the career cred, it takes time, it takes patience, and it takes scrappiness. And so if you're like anonymous here and trying to find clients, I just urge you to dig a layer deeper. So when you think you've hit the bottom and you can't find any more opportunities, keep digging, keep looking. Reach out to your network, reach out to people who admire you, to your biggest fans, even if it's your mom. Reach out to the people that you know you can lean on to find those clients for your business. The other question that this person asked was around, this is a question I can give a quick and dirty answer to. Is it worth it to offer free sample edits? No, please don't offer free sample edits. Y'all, if you're a writer and editor, you charge for your work. You are doing a sample edit is a lot of work. Now, should you charge people a full project fee? No, you can charge for that particular edit that you're doing. And if you're a writer, A person looking to hire a writer or an editor, I highly encourage you to hire somebody to do a sample edit before you engage them for a full project. Very important. So if you're looking to hire, get the sample edit. If you are the person providing the service, do not do it for free, because your talent and your time deserves to be compensated. Please don't do free sample edits. Okay, that's my answer to that one. No free sample edits. Okay, next layer to this question is how to set a budget as a freelancer, especially when you don't have a backup plan like a spouse, another income. And this could really apply to anybody with a volatile income. So freelancer, it could be somebody who has a small company. And this is something that I am always trying to refine, is my cash flow, my business finances. And in the past year, so beginning of 2019, I transitioned over to an S Corp, which requires me now to put myself on payroll. And I have loved that. I wish that I had done that sooner. So for you, for your question, if you could just pretend like you're an S Corp, even if you don't need to become an S Corp yet, and pay yourself consistently based on your projections from the previous year, that way, that will allow you to maintain a better solid cash flow, both in your business and in your personal life. So what I would do is I would look back on your, if you have a 12-month history or even a 6-month history, you can do the math to figure out roughly about what you're taking home next month or each month. Even if it's like 1 month you bring home a bunch, feast, and then 1 month you bring home nothing, famine. What we aim for is really getting a more consistent line of income. So you're paying yourself consistently, which might mean you have a bigger pile of cash over here in the business. But if you have a lean month, you're still able to draw out of the business based on your salary. And then as that pile gets big enough that you feel comfortable, pull out some dividends as well. And then the last question, the last layer to this, if only freelancing part-time, how can an editor go about being selective and taking on projects that fit them best? Well, I would say, number one, if you're part-time, the nice thing is that I'm going to assume you have a full-time job. So if you have a full-time job, you don't necessarily need to take on the part-time work, which by nature of not needing to, you'll be more selective. You can be more selective. But typically what I recommend is if people are trying to build more of a full-time income, so maybe you're trying to build into a full-time income, I would suggest paying attention to your calendar. So once you notice that you are getting booked 2 to 4 months out, you can start, one, raising your prices, and two, being more selective. When your calendar is booked out, that's a sign that either you aren't charging enough or you are so amazing that people are banging at your door to hire you. And that means that you get to make some choice. You get to have some selectivity. Now, in the beginning, I took on pretty much anything that didn't violate my values, you know, my moral compass. I did all kinds of work in all kinds of genres and all types of clients, and had some really weird situations and some awesome situations. And that was true for me for a while. I had days where I was editing for 12 hours. That is a long time to edit. Today, I take on about 1% of the clients that come to me. 1%. I used to take on 100%. But I'm out 10 or 11 years from then. And it takes time. It takes consistency and it takes showing up. But as I mentioned at the front of this discussion, I knew what I was working toward, which was my vision for my life and my husband's and my vision for our family, what we knew we wanted for our life. And it let me be more, I was working toward this thing that mattered to me. And so it gave me that gumption, that encouragement, and that motivation to show up and do the work. The last thing I want to say, if you are a writer or an editor yourself, is that there is no reason, if you are talented and you do the work, that you shouldn't be able to make a six-figure salary within a couple of years, 2 to 3 years, I would say, of starting your business and showing up consistently. Showing up consistently is the important part. Will everybody make that salary? No. Can people who are talented and hard workers make that kind of salary? Absolutely. It takes, again, consistency and a willingness to do the work. Okay. Last question, and I saved this for the end because it was a fun question and I thought it would be a nice way to wrap up our time together. So Brenda asks, what's the best memory you had growing up? And this was a fun one. I had a really good childhood and I have a lot of really wonderful memories. And I couldn't narrow it down to one, so I picked two. I picked my best memory and like my favorite consistent childhood memory. So my best memory was when I was, I don't even know how old I was. I want to say I was 9 or 10. My parents told my sister and me that we were going to go to Oregon to see my aunt and uncle. And so we were excited. You know, they live in Eugene, and we were taking this trip there, really excited about it. And they told us that we were going to be flying into Portland, and then I think we were supposed to take a car. So all the way to, on this trip, we think we're going to Portland, and then we're going to drive to Eugene. And we see that we're boarding this flight to California. And my sister and I are like, why are we going to California? And my parents, they just kept telling us that they were like spelling it wrong when we got on the plane. And so of course we were kids, so we just believed whatever they told us. And then we got to the airport and we took a taxi, which was strange because I thought we were going to take a car, drive a car. And I saw on the little menu on the taxi that Disneyland was like not very far away. And so I pointed it out to my parents and they're like, oh yeah, but we're not going to have time to go to Disneyland. Well, sure enough, we showed up at Disneyland and we stayed at the Disneyland hotel and my parents completely tricked us. And it was the best surprise ever. It was such a fun trip. And I want to do something like that for my kids someday. Hopefully we can go to Disneyland Paris because it's really close and that would be fun. Okay. And then my favorite memory, I would say, is that we used to take these annual trips to the Oregon coast because it's drivable from my hometown of Boise. And we would go to this hotel called the Terriowhile, and it was a two-story little hotel with these beautiful big windows, and then the beach was right there. And growing up, this was our main trip, is going to the Oregon coast. We didn't do a lot of big travel, but we went to the coast a lot. I think I fell in love with the ocean. I think that's why I keep moving to all these destinations that are right near the beach, including Portugal, where I live now. So those were really fun memories. Thank you for that question, Brenda. I enjoyed thinking about that. I love hearing from you. So if you want to ask me a question to answer on my podcast or to show up live, please send it to me. You can go to stacyennis.com. You can DM me on Instagram or on Facebook, whichever one you're watching from right now. I actually do an Ask Stacy segment or episode every so often. So when I get really good questions, I got a question the other day from a friend of mine asking about how do you manage domestic duties? How do my husband and I manage that? Wow, that's a good question. I never would have thought about answering. So that's an example of one that that really stood out to me. So if you have one about books, about business, about life, I don't know, childhood, I guess, please just send it to me. I love getting your questions and I love answering them. And I hope that wherever you are in the world, you are safe and healthy and finding some productive or at least meaningful way to spend your time. Bye, guys. Great questions, right? I absolutely loved answering these questions you all sent in, and I would love, just love, to answer some more in an upcoming episode. Think of it as free coaching. Just go to stacyennis.com, click Let's Connect, and ask me your question. This podcast is produced by me, Stacy Ennis. Special thanks to Daniel Alexander for sound editing and Catherine Fishman for project support. These two make this show possible, and I am grateful. Access show notes at stacyennis.com/podcast or in whatever podcast app you are using. As always, you can connect with me at stacyennis.com, on Instagram at Stacy Ennis, or on Facebook at Stacy Ennis Creative.
And if you like this episode, and I really hope you did, please rate and subscribe. It really, really helps out the show, and I read every single review that comes in. Thank you for joining me this week. I will be back in your ears before you know it.